One of the most disturbing elements of the Prohibition War is how it's made police the enemy of otherwise law-abiding cannabis consumers. Fortunately, one group of police officers knows the futility of Prohibition and reaches out to educate the community and current law enforcement. Today, the Russ Belville Show visits with another speaker from Law Enforcement Against Prohibition with one clear message. Cops say legalize drugs.
Welcome back, everybody, in time for our Cops Say Legalized Drugs segment. Joining us on the phone today, a new speaker to Law Enforcement Against Prohibition. It's Lori Chasey, and I hope I've pronounced that correctly. Hello, Lori.
Hi, Russ.
Pronunciation okay on Chasey?
Well, it's Chasey, but you're close enough.
All right, Lori Chasey. I want to make sure we're all correct here, but thank you for being here. And I note that we're calling you in the Central Time Zone, so where are you located?
I'm just outside of the Chicago city, Chicago, out in the western suburbs, about 50 miles west of the city.
All right. So tell us a little bit about your background in law enforcement and what led you to want to help to legalize drugs.
Well, I have almost 30 years of a multiple-layered career in law enforcement. I've been with both the federal government and with county governments in both DuPage and Kane. My assignments have included narcotics investigation, for asset forfeitures. I've done white-collar crime investigation. And the bulk of my career towards the end, I specialized in crimes against children. And the thing that amazes me is that in each of those roles, I saw firsthand some of the consequences of this war on drugs, and it began to make me question what we were doing and the efficacy of what we were doing in our approach to drug policy in this country.
Well, you know, you mentioned working against crimes against children, and one of the things we hear from people who support prohibition is, what about the children, that somehow legalizing drugs is going to be harmful to the children? How did you see in your experience that prohibition was more harmful to the children?
Well, the areas that I concentrated in were crimes against children, specifically sex abuse and serious physical abuse. And many of the families that we dealt with were left at risk and under-supported because of the absence of a parent or primary breadwinner. And more times than not, they were absent because of incarceration for low-level narcotics convictions. Hmm. And even subsequent to serving any kind of a sentence, you know, once you come out of jail with a drug conviction, it's very hard to put your life back on track. So you have all the concurrent problems with poverty, lack of housing, and these family and children were then often left, you know, to be victimized by friends, acquaintances who knew of their difficult circumstances and took advantage of them. And we saw this time and time again.
You know, I have a friend who had a cultivation conviction, and he's long since served the sentence and the parole and the probation, everything. He's done as he was supposed to do, but now he can't be an assistant coach, a volunteer coach on his kid's baseball team because of a prior felony drug conviction. It's just amazing how these can have repercussions later in life. As you dealt with people and dealt with the criminal justice system, and you saw kind of this revolving door, I've heard many of the officers I've spoken to have talked about it like that. It was just the same people for the same things over and over again. Mm-hmm. How does ending this drug war begin to help some of those people if we don't also provide them a way to clear up their record?
Well, one of the things that, you know, we hope to accomplish, when you talk about the war on drugs, it's important to recognize what it has devolved into, which is, you know, going after low-level users and suppliers in ways, and we've already touched on, you know, the secondary consequences to these folks when they come out. And by disenfranchising these people, we make it more likely rather than less that they will reoffend. If, in fact, I get out of jail and I cannot get a job and I cannot get back into the mainstream, oftentimes, you know, we go back to the self-medicating behaviors that got us into trouble in the first place. Or we look to the sale of drugs as a profit opportunity where we've absolutely been unable to find any other reasonable way to support ourselves. So in essence, the war has put us in a place where these folks have to reoffend or have to, because we've marginalized them so much from mainstream society, the options are very limited. And, you know, what we're advocating is the regulation and of distribution of these drugs. And for those who suffer from a substance issue or an abuse issue, that puts it back in the hands of the medical community where it rightfully belongs. And it will be to those folks to craft the solutions, you know, for minimizing the impact of drugs and this revolving door aspect to drug addiction. Mm.
We're speaking with Lori Chassie. She's with Law Enforcement Against Prohibition. They've got plenty of great speakers everywhere in the country and a lot of places around the world. Check out their website at leap.cc. And Lori, you know, there's been a lot of stories about policing and I would call over-policing in our country lately. And, you know, in your neck of the woods up there in Chicago, we hear of the secret Chicago black site where the cops were taking people with no access to lawyers for, you know, days at a time. How much of this over-policing, over-militarization of our police do you think owes to our drug war?
Well, certainly I think we can go right back to, you know, the mid-80s and the source of the extreme funding or excessive funding or increase in funding that was given to law enforcement agencies in response to the rise of crack cocaine. And then, you know, you have the Homeland Security piece come into play. And there is so much money to be made and had by illegal drug distribution that in ramping up their enforcement efforts, it also became a tool for law enforcement to acquire assets, you know, through asset forfeiture. And I mentioned I did, you know, some of that work. If you catch a big enough drug dealer, you can and tie their money to their homes, their cars, et cetera. You have access to that as an agency, that money comes back to you. And it became a revolving door for many of the larger departments, you know, in terms of helping to fund their agencies through these large forfeitures. And certainly when there's a lot of money, and I'm not going to point any fingers at one department over another, and understand I'm out in the suburbs, so what we see out here is a little different than sure. In the city of Chicago. But in any organization that large, you know, there are always going to be those few individuals who look at that kind of profit margin and start to engage in behaviors to their own benefit. And that's one of the other unintended consequences of this war on drugs. There's a tremendous profit to be made, and when you have people doing, for instance, undercover narcotic work for extended periods of time, there are those people that are going to become susceptible to the draw of the affluence they see the illegal drug providers acquiring and living, and that is a real a danger to those law enforcement officers who, you know, may not be as strong as some others.
Yes, you bring up the asset forfeiture, and you know that's shocking that how much money and assets are taken from citizens who don't even have to be charged or proven guilty of any crime in many instances. And the law enforcement agencies, they're figuring that into their budgets. That's part of their forecast. So they anticipate going and getting that much. And then we have the private prison industries that sign contracts with these states that say you got to keep the beds 90% full. How are we going to reverse the economics of that when these budgets now are depending on this source of money? We're going to have to either fund them more, or are they going to get used to doing with less?
Well, right, and certainly as government funding retracts, you know, some of these other funding sources become even more attractive. Mm-hmm. And that's one of the dangers. You know, but as far as keeping prisons full, the drug war itself has done a tremendous job of doing that by criminalizing so many individuals. You know, at the present time, and again, you can go right back and point to the mid-80s and this step up in our efforts to go after drug users, and look at the rise in the prison population in this country. We have a larger per capita prison population than China, than the country of China. We have less than a quarter of their population. We have four times, you know, we're four times smaller, and yet we incarcerate more people than they do. We have the largest per capita prison population in the world, and half of that federally is drug convictions.
Yeah, it's a shocking statistic any way you slice it. And we're doing everything we can to try to reverse that trend. Lori, I also want to talk a little bit about the interaction between the police and the community, something that, you know, we've seen flare up in all sorts of cities now, Ferguson, Baltimore, you know, all sorts of places. And the effect of the war on drugs in separating the police from the citizens they are supposed to be serving and seeing them rather as an enemy. And speak to that a bit. Have you seen that in your experience, that people are more reticent to trust police? And how has the drug war affected that?
Well, I think people are certainly more reticent to trust the police, particularly in some of the larger departments and communities where there are certainly, you know, those officers who go well too far. And when you see the disproportionate enforcement and incarceration of different pieces of our population, the Black community falls victim to drug conviction very disproportionately to any other population in the country. And I think that can't be overlooked when you look at the genesis of the mistrust between different populations and our police. And the militarization that comes with the war on drugs and the mentality of you being at war, that plays on both sides of the equation. Police become more fearful, and let's face it, the war on drugs or illegal drug use has made for an extremely violent element in terms of the drug cartels themselves. So on one side, you've got a community of lawful people who are fearful of their militarized police department. You have some officers who act well outside their legal authority for all the wrong reasons, but you also have a percentage of police officers who are working in a highly inflamed, dangerous environment. There is no better armed force, I would say, in the United States than illegal drug suppliers. Mm. Yeah. They have more resources, better weapons than our police departments do. And I think there's been this sort of arms race between the two, and our private citizens are caught in the middle of that. Mm,
well spoken. Lori Chassie from Law Enforcement Against Prohibition. You are a Midwestern suburban woman, and we find when we poll for legalization, women poll behind men in their support. In our remaining 30 seconds, can you tell Midwestern suburban women why we should legalize drugs?
We should legalize drugs to get the supply of drugs out of the hands of illegal drug dealers who are using your children, who are recruiting your children to sell, who are engaging your children in the use, who are causing your children to be criminalized and physically harmed by drug use. If we legalize the product, we take it off the streets, regulate it, put it in clinics, put it in safe distribution environments that cater only to adults, significant regulation, and combine that with an education piece, and we will make your children as safe as we, you know, have made them against tobacco. One of the things I like to point out is there is only one drug that we have been successful in reducing the use among youth, and that is tobacco, and we've done that through regulation and education. And regulation and education will make our children safer, and that's what the suburban women in my neck of the woods need to hear. And that's what women in the city need to hear. If we take the profit margins away or minimize the profit margins from these cartels, that will make every neighborhood safer.
Oh, thank you, Lori Chassie from Law Enforcement Against Prohibition. We appreciate you being on the show.
Thank you so much.
All right. When we come back, a radical rant, a message to my Idaho friends on your neighbors having legal weed. Stick around.
You're tuned into the Russ Belville Show, the voice of the marijuana nation.
420 Radio.